Okay, it's just coming up to 9:40, so we might as well get started. I'm the moderator for this session, Michael Walsh, and we've actually got 10 speakers all told. I won't read them all out, but they're in the conference papers. But the speaker in front of you is James Crippen, who'll be talking about Across Mountain and Sea, Bringing Language to Linguists. James.
So we're going to report on a project Across Mountain and Sea, Bringing Tlingit to Linguists, which was to bring Tlingit speakers, native speakers, to the Linguistics Department at the University of British Columbia. I'm Zeush, James Crippen. And this is Keishi Veskuli from Teslin in the Yukon, the Xinhuan Kopiton. Shukwana Kanita Tan.
Good morning, all. Keishi Veskuli, Yukatuasa. My names are Keishi and Veskuli. I am from Teslin. Kokatan Chau has the Hoda, Dakka Lingit, Ayahayati. I belong to the Kokatan women of the Kokatan clan, which is a Crow clan. We are from Teslin. Chakaya Yeh Hua Kain Yu Eitangi Kadayin Yan Han. Heard some time ago when you speak to people, you stand, and that is because I stand before you in respect of you, not to look down on you. Ajaya Yag Kahan, that's why I'm standing here. Ye Aya Yeda Twine Kain Shkadunigi Kain Shkatusakuwu. And this is what I think is our formal self introduction. Ye Yehwaji, Yahayu Atangi Yin Ach, Pakusti Yitu, Yegu Gank, Ain Siku. This is why I feel that you are hearing some of our language and you're hearing a little bit of our culture. Yehwaji, Aaya. That's what I feel like I am doing, and I'm practicing my culture. Thank you, all of you, for listening to me.
I'm called Zeush. Deshitan nach kakak hiti duch ka shtakim kwan khatsati. I'm from the Deshitan clan from the Basket House, and I'm from the shtakim kwan, the Stikin people at the mouth of the Stikin River in Wrangell. So our project was to bring Tlingit speakers to linguists. So I'll tell you about what our problem was. The metaphor that we used to organize our sort of conceptual space of the project, and then how we brought Tlingit to linguists, our evaluation and our reflection on the results of our work, and then finally answering whether this was a solution to our problem. As you can guess, it was. So our problem first, and I'm trained in formal linguistics and syntax and semantics, so I think in the way of problem solution. And it just seemed natural for me to throw a bunch of bullets together and treat them like data and then arrange them until I got a structure out of it, which was the problem solution structure that I'm so used to doing. So you'll see I'm following both both my indigenous knowledge of our culture and our practices and language, but also I'm following the similar but different traditions from my intellectual background dating back to Boas and earlier. So our problem is that Tlingit has very few linguists working on it. It's there's about 35,000 Tlingit people, but only about 200 native speakers. There's been a considerable amount of documentary work, but there's very little in the way of description, and as a consequence, it's very difficult for people to, even linguists, to get started on the language. It needs a lot of bootstrapping. It's also a very difficult language to work on. It's rather famous for this. So linguists need an extensive amount of training before they can actually work on the language. And the community really wanted new research for revitalization purposes. We want new description. We want to analyze things that we know haven't been documented, and speakers know that are missing in the work that we have so far. Tlingit is also very far away from everywhere. There aren't any speakers living in cities with linguistic departments. You get lucky in North America because oftentimes you find native speakers living in cities where there are universities, and as a consequence, the university and the native speakers can work together. That's not the case for Tlingit. There simply isn't a Tlingit speaker living anywhere outside of Alaska and the Yukon. There are maybe one or two in Seattle, but I wasn't going to University of Washington, so there weren't any nearby. Our proposal was to bring Tlingit to linguists. This is reversing the tradition of going into the field for one linguist. Our idea was that you can send one linguist to work in some remote community, but they're only going to be able to do what they're good at, and they can only do one person worth of work. A native speaker can do quite a bit of work with different linguists over a space of a single day, whereas one linguist can only do so much. So this was a reversal of the field tradition by bringing the language to the academia. One other thing is that this is not a new idea. It's actually an old concept that was done before World War II. Franz Boas trained a couple of, he actually trained a Tlingit speaker who came to work with him for a year developed a writing system based on Americanist transcription and left behind a lot of dictionary materials. Boas also trained a number of other people in the same way. So we're really just bringing back something that is already part of the linguistic research tradition. So we would have speakers as resident consultants at the university moving in with us. Here's a quick overview. Tlingit is spoken in the Yukon, northern BC, and southeastern Alaska, just north of Haida Gwaii, and just south of Iap and Supiak territory, neighboring with a number of Dene languages. So our metaphor, it's converging streams. We have two streams in each side, and we try to organize our thoughts about the project this way. Keik a dach a. Keik a chat zeosh. I'm the younger generation. Dach a, our elders, the older generation. We have two Kwans, two major groups of people who have different lifestyles but a shared language, the coastal and inland people. So the project brought coastal and inland speakers together to work at the university. We have Tlingit people and other people, all the linguists who aren't Tlingit, but all the linguists who are Tlingit, which is not a large population, but it's significant. Also, we work between Canada and the United States. People, Tlingit spans the border. Our traditional territories are sliced up by an arbitrary geographic designation. So Canada and the USA are two streams that converge in our work. Urban and rural. We have people from urban societies. Juneau is a moderately sized city. Teslin is definitely what one would say is a village. It's a small, remote community. Academia, we're bringing together indigenous and academic traditions, intellectual traditions, to work together. We're not simply just doing academic work, we're just doing indigenous work. We're interdisciplinary. We worked with both anthropology and linguistics. And then within linguistics, because we're not a single linguist in the team, we could do all sorts of things. We did phonology, phonetics on one side, and syntax and semantics on the other. This is something that is almost impossible for a single linguist to do. But even in the space of a year, we got an enormous amount of work done thinking this way. The tasks for this project were both research, but also teaching and mentoring. We wanted to raise a new generation of linguists who could work on this language, teaching them and mentoring them on how to work on endangered First Nations languages and on Tlingit in particular. And then finally, we had two purposes, which were research and revitalization. We want to do research for research's sake, but we also want to feed that research into revitalization efforts. So we brought Tlingit to linguists. Bring native speakers to live at the university for a year. They served as consultants for a year-long field methods course. We actually hired them as adjunct professors. In retrospect, although the prestige associated with that was good, the difficulties with the bureaucracy were a problem. It might have been better to hire them as honorary professors and then do it through a sort of contract or something like that. But this is something that, you know, nobody had tried before, so we had to learn. Our purpose here was to train students and give them exposure to a First Nations culture as field methods. And then the consultants would also get to see how linguists are taught, young students, how they're beginning to become linguists. And that's something that most consultants aren't used to seeing. They're usually used to seeing grad students and professionals already. But here we are working with a bunch of young undergrads trying to figure out their way and making mistakes. It humanizes the linguist in a way. Another point was to bring our speakers into our research group, not just one person working with a linguist, but actually participating in the efforts involved in research, which are not all just asking some questions, arguing, complaining, debating about different positions, and challenging each other's viewpoints. So that our consultants got to see how actual research is conducted. And our researchers also got to learn quite a bit about language and culture. We would have sent one person up there, they would have learned a little bit in the space of a few months. Here, they get to live with and spend lots of time with native speakers and learn a lot more about the culture than they would. Our native speaker elders were more than just consultants. They were living in the department and joining the community, meeting a lot of people who were not actually engaged in the project and making friendships with them, participating in the department's social life, and forming lasting personal relationships with people in the department. So we look back on what we did. One thing we were surprised by is that there was interest and willingness on all sides, including in administration and bureaucracy. We kind of expected some pushback. There's some pushback against linguists from the Aboriginal studies people. There's pushback from the department on trying to organize something like this, pushback from the administration. But actually, everybody was absolutely willing to help us in any way they could. But one thing we learned is that you have to start early because the bureaucracy moves like a glacier. They aren't unwilling, they're just really, really slow. And you have to keep that in mind. Yes, there's been no progress, but they're really trying. Bureaucracy needs a lot of time to develop procedures to get things done. And also changing people's lives, our consultants' lives also, and the lives of the people working in the department. This requires patience, and so we should have started earlier. Another thing is to involve everyone right from the start, and that's not just the participants, the grant writers, but also the administration. Keeping the administrators involved in the project was essential, and we should have done it earlier. Our department administrator, Edna Dharmaratne, actually made the project happen, and without her, we would have never gotten off the ground. That's something we should have planned for and included her in the grant discussion, for example. It takes a long time to learn the project and goals, so keeping your administrators involved allows them to keep up on what you're trying to do. Also, choose your team very carefully. You don't want just a bunch of linguists. You want people with a lot of diverse skill sets outside of linguistics. People with experience running complex projects, scheduling, managing grant money, and so forth, because this is not just a sit down and do some research kind of project. We also became ambassadors for each other. Our consultants now represent us at home as linguists, and they can explain what linguists do and what they don't do. And there's a lot of confusion in a lot of communities about what linguists actually do. So, linguists, Shingit Hasiti, they're really people too. Linguists also become representatives of the community in academia. We provide research contacts for other people in academia. We advocate for the community in some ways, and a lot of other aspects. We also communicate the value of an endangered language to people who might not ever hear about it. Physicists and biologists who would have no interest were, you know, showing up to talks and things and learning, oh, you guys are doing stuff. That's really interesting because, you know, we actually do things, not just sit in offices all day. So was this a solution for our problem? Well, I think it was. It might not be the ideal solution. It might not be the best way of doing things, but I think we did a good job. We successfully brought Tlingit to linguists. It was a really cost-effective project. We got, as they say, a big bang for the buck. It was not very expensive relative to a lot of major research projects, especially in regards to field work, where it costs a lot of money to have somebody housed in a place for a long period of time. Either that or it's a definite burden on the community, even if there's not a lot of cost for hotels or things like that. Our grant was really just $75,000, and over the space of a year, we got an incredible amount of stuff out of it. Not just the research results, but also the community connections and the personal friendships that were built were just unbelievably productive in comparison to your usual, run off to the field and do some work for 6 months kind of grant. So we think it was successful, and we think it is sustainable, actually. It produced a lot of new linguists to work on the language. 6 months after the project was over, there were still six people working. A number of students continued to work on the language even after they had graduated, still doing stuff just purely out of interest. 1 year after, there's five people working. And out of the five that are working right now, at least four are committed to long-term, career-length work on the language. And that's not something you could get by sending one grad student. We've got tenured professors who are now taking an active interest in the language, in the family, and doing things that you wouldn't expect. We doubled the previous number of researchers that were working on this language. So that's a success. We also had an enormous empirical impact. We did not just one thing. Syntax, semantics, phonology, and phonetics were all covered as part of this project. We have results in all of these subfields. There's at least 5,000 database entries from the field methods class. That's an enormous amount of material that's produced. Of course, it needs a lot of work to tidy it up and gloss and segment it, but it's still a huge body of example sentences to work from. We'll have hours and hours of high-quality video conversation bringing these native speakers together and just letting them chit-chat. It was an incredible experience for everybody involved. We also had several storyboard narratives made as part of the field methods class to produce particularly targeted situations in the language and see how the language would express these issues. And the speakers, our native speakers, particularly enjoyed those. They had a lot of fun with the art and the stories. We also did a lot of long-term partnership building. Linguists who were involved in the project are already attending community events. Last summer, we went to attend Bessie's potlatch. And so these are people who a year ago had no knowledge about Tlingit society, and a year later are going to attend one of the great formal celebrations in Tlingit life and understanding how to operate in the culture. A huge change. We're also recruiting new students from the community. My department has just accepted another Tlingit, another native person working on the language, to get a master's degree in linguistics. That probably wouldn't have happened had we not had the expertise built at this university to accept her. There's also a greater interest in academia and a greater visibility about the language. We're receiving an awful lot of questions from people who we barely know. They're hearing through the grapevine, oh, you're doing all this stuff on the language. Oh, I'd never even heard about that language, you know? So even in academia, this is having a remarkable impact, and we've barely published anything. We also instituted a lot of changes in the bureaucracy. Our little section of the university is not used to dealing with Aboriginal scholars. And so we've sort of changed the way that people work with them. The faculty administration is now willing to consider people who, well, they don't have a PhD, but they have an immense storehouse of knowledge, so why can't they be a professor? And that was something that we were really surprised to see change in the administration. We have further work and obligations. Of course, we need to publish our results. And there's an awful lot of processing of the materials that we've produced. And also, we're working very slowly at translating some of the new knowledge to revitalization. Our work on nominal predication opened up this whole area of the language that hadn't been described. And suddenly, it's exactly the sort of thing that that Tlingit elders say to children. So we've managed to stumble into some of the syntactic structures that are essential for teaching young children language that had never been documented. And there's, of course, future field trips that we want to do, including the students. We're hoping to get some grants to do a field school and bring up a couple of the students who worked with us to do future work up in the community and get to know more people. So with that, we will say, Gunash Chish.
Just to add a bit to what I was saying, I learned my language from the laps of my dad and my mother, and when I was about 14 and a half, I got through residential school at grade 8. And I thought I was smart enough, I don't have to have any more schooling. So I carried on, we had our family. And thanks to James, I ended that journey from 14 and a half years to my last birthday at 70 as three glorious months of being professor at UBC. My husband says not bad, from the residential school dropout to UBC.
Okay, we've got about 9 minutes for questions or discussion. Yes.
You know, the Southern Tlingit really speak a very different Tlingit, mm-hmm. and they're very upset that nobody's helping them. Mm-hmm. There's no field work there at all. And there's also the middle, like in Cape. Mm-hmm. Which is just, it's closer to the southern than it is
That's
to
mine.
The northern. Right.
Yeah.
So it's really has troubled them because nobody's taking an interest, and yet their language is dying. There's so few of them. So I'm wondering if there's going to be any kind of work with them.
I'm hoping to spend some time in Cake and Klawak.
Okay.
That's great. Actually my next plan.
Wonderful. Because they have complained to me.
Yeah.
And I said I can't do anything.
No, I know.
You need some help.
I'm going to have somebody come down and help me negotiate the more fine details of the language.
Right.
So ideally, we're going to try to do that.
Even a little different.
Just slight differences, and the tone system is a little different in things.
Right.
I know a little bit about it because in Wrangell, that art is like cake. It's the transitional sort of in-between speech. And so Margaret Hope, for instance, is one of the last speakers from Wrangell, and I've worked a lot with her to discover how it works. So.
I had the opportunity to spend some time in your classes while you were while you visited, and I wish I had more. I have had more time to attend, but I had to spend time on Vancouver Island to do my research over there. But first of all, I just wanted to thank you for giving me and all the other students that opportunity to really get an insight into your culture and everything. I'm sure I'm not the only one who had a really great experience doing that. I have one short question and then one that you might want to elaborate on a little bit more. So in the beginning you mentioned that you brought together, one of the streams that you brought together was linguistics and anthropology. So at least as much as I saw while I was there, I saw that, you know, there was a whole bunch of linguists working on the language. Did you have any, was there any sort of interdisciplinary collaboration that also anthropologists?
We were actually working a lot with Pat Moore in the anthropology department, although he wasn't involved in the field methods part of it. But Bessie and Pat actually go back a long way. And so we did work on place names and the structure of place names and relationships with the Tagish Kwan and with the neighboring Kaska people. And so we did do some, but it just wasn't in the linguistics department per se, so you didn't get to see it.
The other question that I had is that you listed all the advantages of bringing in native speakers to a linguistics community, mm-hmm. right, to a linguist community. So, but of course, you mentioned some of the complications, but I don't think you really touched upon your personal experience of being away from the community for a whole year. I'm sure you have family, duties that you have to come after in the community maybe too. So how was that experience for you, like being away, so far away for such a long time?
Yeah. I was warned that question might come up. When I went to UBC, it was 3 months total. You know, I talked them out of a little bit of time so I could stay at home and go and look for my moose. And we actually didn't find one, but eventually my husband did. So that was 3 months away. It was for the fall semester. But that was not my first time away from home. The first time was actually after I was 50 and going on about 35 years of marriage. I went back to school to the Yukon College in Whitehorse. And then after that, there was a year in Fairbanks. So I got one degree there, an associate degree in native language education. And I went back home, and after that, I guess the bug had bitten me, so I went back to school again and got the full degree. Took 3.5 school years. So to me, that was just old hat. And I've also done a lot of interviews in the language for our native-owned television at home. It's called NADAW on APTN. So every now and again, they'll play those interviews. And time is short, so there was something here I didn't catch it. I did, but I didn't mention it to my friend here. He mentioned plague-a. Our language is so complex. Plague-a means the other one.
Oh.
Plague-a,
huh? Shukwana-a.
Plague-a is also just one at a time.
Ah, so. Actually. I'll have to write this down later.
Like I say, I guess it's a teacher coming out in me because I've been involved in language all my life. Plague-a is the other one, but plague-a is one,
mm-hmm.
just the one. So there is what they call glottal stop in there. And speaking of linguists, when I worked with them in Fairbanks, one of them said, "Boy, they must be driving you crazy." And I said, "They are. They're taking my language and distributing it." But I enjoyed it, obviously, so it's good. Someday I'd like to be where James is. He's working on his PhD. I have a BA. I'm hoping to go the rest of the way. And then I will be Dr. Jackson.
We've got about 2 minutes for other questions or comments. Yes?
Can you touch a little bit on the resources that are being developed for the community based off of this?
One of our participants, Renee Lance Twitchell, is a professor at the University of Alaska Southeast and runs the Alaska Native Language Program there. He's possibly one of the two best language learners. I think he's actually better than I am, which is kind of embarrassing because I'm the linguist. We worked actually a lot together in trying to figure out what his students were having problems with so that we would focus our research on things like this. And that's actually how we ended up doing some of these things that were considered simple baby talk, but turned out to be rather complicated stuff because his students had recognized it's not as easy as people say. There's stuff going on there. And so we had to do some research on it. And one of the things that we're working on right now is to write that up. To explain in simpler terms rather than a formal linguistic paper to be published, but just to explain, like, here's the data that we collected and here's what the patterns mean to you. So it was really useful for us to actually have that input from the students and from the language teaching because it opened up a whole area of the language that had never been seriously investigated, and it's actually a sizable chunk of my dissertation now. So really, I mean, when I get my dissertation done, we're going to pick up the pieces that we have and translate them. But even now, actually, Lance has taken some of the data that we've collected and some of the insights we've got and is already incorporating them into his teaching. So it's not a formal thing. We didn't develop curricula or anything like that. But because we have close ties with the language teachers, we're just sort of trading information by email and allowing them to incorporate it, and also feeding back to us, you know, when they say, well, that's funny because so-and-so over here says that's not how it works. And then we would be like, are you sure, Bessie? You know. So, yeah, there was a lot of feedback back and forth under the scenes.
Yes, it's web.
Uh-huh. Question.
Well, I just said, yes, I am. How about you? He says, maybe.
Believe you. Mm-hmm.
I wasn't present for it, but there was a recent meeting last summer where they actually did an ACTful style evaluation of language speakers in front of a board, and Bessie was a participant in that. I think they had maybe 15 people that they brought, wasn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there were 15 students of the language who were good enough to go through that sort of evaluation. There's an awful lot, you know, who take 1 year and sort of drop out. But at the time, there were 15 students who were dedicated enough to go through an evaluation. And that wasn't all of the population. So I'd say, probably confidently, there's about 25 or 30 people who are reaching some level of conversational competence. We did find that, quite surprising to us, there were 3 people out of that cohort who ranked, as according to the ACTful standards, as low to mid-advanced speakers, which was really extraordinary given the almost total lack of grammatical teaching that we're you know, able to do. These are people who just have the gift, really. And we also are proud to say that there are a couple families raising children at home speaking the language. And mm-hmm. I can say with confidence that there are 4 children under the age of 3 who are native speakers of the language now.
Good note to end on. The next session starts in about 8 minutes' time, so thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank
You've
you.
Been a very attentive audience.
Jamie, half of those children are